T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Monday, 4 o'clock. That means it's time for our weekly chat with Pierre McGuire, who was in St. Louis for the NHL All-Star Game. Tristan Jarry and Chris Letang, part of that Metro Division team that lost to the Atlantic in the 3-on-3 semifinal portion of the All-Star Weekend. Pierre, I'm sure, like the rest of us, you were glued to your TV or phone, reacting to Kobe Bryant's death yesterday. You know so many people, both in hockey and around the sports world. Your reaction, and with you, I never know. There's 6 degrees. You know everybody. Maybe a personal run-in with Kobe Bryant for you over the years.
I met Kobe over the years, not a bunch, but a few times. One of the times that I remember in particular, fellas, was interviewing him at the 2012 Summer Olympics in London. Dick Ebersol, who was still part of NBC at that time as a president, and Sam Flood, who's the executive producer of the NHL on NBC, actually asked if I'd be interested in interviewing Kevin Durant and Kobe Bryant before the gold medal game in London. And I said, sure, absolutely. I said, any particular reason why you chose me? And I said, yeah, we think it'd be cool to have the hockey guy interview the basketball guys. And so I did that, and I had a blast, but I have a little hockey sidebar story to tell you. Kobe, before the interview starts, Kobe goes, hey, you know a neighbor of mine? He's a good friend of mine. I go, really? Who's that? He goes, Chris Pronger. And I said, really? I said, he's your neighbor? He goes, he was in Newport Beach when he played for Anaheim. You were his coach, weren't you? And I said, I was. He goes, he said you were really mean. So I said, I was actually pretty mean to him at that point in his career, but it turned out pretty well for him. He goes, I'm just kidding. He says he likes you. But it was good the way he started the interview. But, you know, you sit there with Kobe and you see the size of him and you see the level of professionalism, just talking to him and his knowledge base of all the players that he was playing with and the players he was playing against. It was mind-shattering. To be perfectly blunt, with a Pittsburgh angle, it made me admire him because it reminded me of Mario Lemieux. Really did.
And you're a fan of all sports. We know this from our conversations. So was he somebody that you tried to watch whenever you'd get a free minute and you might be watching basketball, Pierre?
Absolutely. Especially, you know, the last couple of years, because I've spent a lot of time out in the West. He obviously hasn't been playing, but you see him and you see some of the things that he's done away from basketball. But when he was playing, I can tell you that when I had opportunities to watch the Lakers, I did, just like when I was coaching in the NHL, whenever I had a chance to watch Michael Jordan, I always tried to watch Jordan because I would learn. I'd learn different things, you know. And a lot of basketball, if you're really looking at it, fellas, you can apply some of the tactics, especially in their defensive schemes, to penalty killing. You can really do that. So I tried to do some of that. But in particular with Kobe and with Michael Jordan, those are the two basketball guys I watched the most.
Pierre McGuire, our 93.7 The Fan NHL analyst, joining us here from the NHL on NBC. Pierre, you got to see Tristan Jarry and Chris Letang up close this weekend. You've got a long relationship with Letang. Wondering if you had a chance to catch up with him. What did he tell you, if he did, about these Penguins?
We didn't talk about the Penguins. You know what we actually talked about? His young son, who was following him around the entire dressing room. And I thought it was phenomenal because his son wanted to hang around in the Western Conference dressing room more than the Eastern Conference dressing room because his son's a big fan of Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon. So his son actually wanted to spend more time in the Western Conference dressing room than the Eastern Conference. I thought that was great. Christopher looked great. He was very relaxed. I thought he was in a perfect ambassador-type role for the Penguins representing them at the All-Star Game. And I thought that Tristan Jarry was outstanding. He was so affable. Communicated well with his teammates on the bench, had a ton of fun when he was in goal. I thought he played well when he had the chance to play. So all in all, it was a solid weekend for the Penguin representatives there.
Pierre, we get, you know, not within, what, about a couple weeks now, 3.5 weeks of the trade deadline, or a month actually close to it. And I think one of the things everyone knows, the Penguins, because Jim Rutherford says it explicitly, are out looking for a top six winger, but – The other thing is always the old axiom, you can never have too many defensemen. You always want to tweak things. Do the Penguins, if they get fully healthy on the blue line, really need to make a move to bolster that position?
I would say yes, because you're still dealing with some young players, John Marino being one of them. You're dealing with some smaller guys who potentially could get hurt. You know, Chad Ruedel is one example. I'm a big fan of Chad's, by the way. I think he's been a really good player for the Penguins in terms of the role that they've created for him. I'm not sure you can ever have enough. I'll give you a case in point. I'm in Dallas tonight to do the Tampa-Dallas game tonight, and I watched Dallas practice this morning. The thing that stood out to me is eight healthy defensemen, and I talked to their general manager, Jimmy Neal, after the skate, and I said, you planning on sticking with eight? And he goes, we're not moving any of these guys. They're all staying. So he's aware that you need to have at least eight and probably 10 internally because of injury if you plan on going for a long run. So I, knowing Jim, and he's really good at this time of the year, identifying organizational strengths and weaknesses, I would imagine he'll try to be aggressive, try to get a veteran presence on the back end to help him out.
Pierre McGuire, our guest here, and he keeps saying in this Athletic piece about how you're not going to be able to fill Jake Gensel's skates, Pierre, with one guy,
yep.
but he wants more
yep.
depth and more options in his top six. And there's that conundrum, right, with do you go rental because the prices are cheaper, or do you pay a little bit more to get a guy that's not just a 20-game and playoff type? And that's a real fine line for a GM, isn't it?
It really is a fine line. That's really well presented, by the way. I love that question, the way it was phrased, because there is that fine line. And that's the fans want instantaneous results. And I understand they don't have to live in the cap world unless they're managing their budget at home. But in the cap world for a GM, it's really hard. It's extremely difficult. I like the philosophy about the rental player because they are a bit cheaper. There's one name that comes to mind, and the only reason I bring it up is because there are a lot of teams that want this player, and I hate naming players, but it's no secret. It's already been well documented in the New York Post. Chris Kreider would be a guy that would fit on virtually any team's top six. He's big. He's fast. He's really skillful. He can shoot the puck. He can create room. He's played deep into the playoffs before, obviously. He would be a guy that if you could get him, that would be a guy in the top six. It would really help you overcome a little bit of what Gensel obviously is going to be missed for.
Pierre, do you think, though, when you're comparing a rental player to somebody that has a couple of years of contractual control, it can possibly affect the performance where a rental guy might be looking at that next contract, might be pressing a little bit on the mental side, and if it's somebody who, yeah, costs you more, but he's going to be there for a while, there's more of a comfort level and more of an ease at just joining the team and doing the best he can to help them?
Both things, where you can make the argument both ways on both of those different descriptions. So here's the one thing I would say about the rental player. If he's mature and he knows that he's good and he trusts himself, chances are you're going to get a player that's really going to help you. Those guys are really worth their weight in gold. Sometimes, not always, it's better to get a rental player that's never won before, even though he's been in the playoffs, because they bring a certain energy to them when they come to your team that really invigorates the entire team. And I think that's something that can't be undersold. The Montreal Canadiens in the 1970s, virtually every single year, brought in an older player that had been close but had never won, and it brought significant energy to their team. You know, I think back to 92 when we brought Samuelson, Schell, and Tockett and Reggett. Those were three guys that had been close, but they never won. Talk to any of the players around the 92 Penguins, they'll tell you those three players, but the two skating players, Samuelson and Tockett, they made a huge difference. They brought so much energy and emotion to our team. It really helped us a lot in tough playoff series. So I think you want to try to get an older guy, whether it's his contract's long or short, it doesn't matter, but somebody that's been close that gives you a chance to win and really wants to win himself.
Pierre, going back to what you said about Kreider, do you think Mike Sullivan having a relationship with the player, going back to New York, having been an assistant there, is relevant? Do you think that that's a factor in the math or the discussion that goes into bringing him to Pittsburgh?
It should be. Whenever you have a chance to get inside information and know both sides of the deal, it really helps you a lot. A lot of times, a lot of these managers are making deals when they really only know one side of the deal. They know the player they're giving up. Sometimes they don't always know the player they're getting back. They know his on ice. They don't know his off ice. They don't know his character. They don't know his confidence level. They don't know a lot of things. In the case of Kreider, a lot of people, well, you know, Gonchar would know him from having played against him. Coach Sullivan would know him significantly because he coached him and he saw him, you know, and again, you see, the Boston guys are tight, and Kreider played at Boston College, even though Sullivan's a BU guy. They know what guys are about, the Boston group, and so I think that that would give them a little bit of an advantage in terms of knowledge base.
Pierre, from a strict hockey perspective, what are the advantages and disadvantages of occasionally making a move several weeks before the deadline, as Rutherford's been known to do?
I think it's better to make a move earlier so you can amalgamate the player into your lineup a little bit more easily because he has more time to get into the rhythm of the team. The other reason why is you dictate the marketplace. Once you get to deadline day and you don't have a deal done, somebody's going to try to hold you up, and that can be painful. I know the 2 years in Pittsburgh that I was there, our deals were done before the deadline. They were close to the deadline, but they were done before the deadline. And it paid significant dividends for us. It's significant. I mean, there's no way the 91 team wins without Francis, without Samuelson, without Jennings. There's no possible way. And I don't think the 92 team wins without Tockett, Samuelson, and Reggett. I just don't think they do. So Craig Patrick was brilliant in both situations. He really delegated well. He trusted the people that worked for him. And it was, I think, any manager going into the league should use the old Penguins as an example of how to do deadline deals, because I think Jimmy Rutherford's taken a page out of their book and done a lot of what Craig Patrick used to do, to be honest.
A month until the NHL trade deadline, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to Pierre Maguire about these rumors and everything that goes into what the Penguins can and maybe can't do between now and deadline day. Pierre, thank you so much again. We look forward to it, as always, next week.
You guys are awesome to visit with. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the week, everybody.
You bet. There you go, Pierre Maguire. Penguins get back on the ice Friday against the Flyers. We'll be across the street at the Marriott City Center to get you set for the renewal of that rivalry. You can text us on the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line. Edgar Snyder reminds you to text responsibly. Jonathan Mayo, his job is to rank prospects for MLB Pipeline. He also covers the draft inside and out. So he's going to tell us what the Pirates are getting back from the Diamondbacks next. For Starling Marte on 93.7 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.